and world economy. Rise of the global country of world peace. Prevention-oriented ideal administration of Ram Raj. For every nation to enjoy invincibility. Peace on earth. His Excellency, Dr. Bevan Morris, Minister of Enlightenment of the Global Country of World Peace.
From the very beginning of his teaching to the world, His Holiness Maharshi Mahesh Yogi has explained the unity of all religions, and that in the original teaching of every religion was the knowledge of how to transcend and experience the light of God in one's own self. But over time, this teaching is lost in the world, and all that remains is the outer body of the religion, without the inner spirit, which is the direct experience of the light of God, which is within every human being. Recently, Maharshi made some interesting comments about religion during a press conference. There was a question from the president of a religious college in Houston, Texas, in the United States. And he said, basically, there is nothing that can be done about sin, that sin is inevitable in human life, and there is no way of changing the reality of our world because of this fact. Maharshi responded as follows to this remark of this president. I would draw a line. Total is virtue, partial is sin. Because what you are sinning is, total natural law is available to you, but you are not participating. If religion has a meaning, then it should keep away from sinning. That means it should keep away from fragmentation. The message here is, be in the total light of God. Be in the total light of God. That religion is useless and poison, which says sin is inevitable. Whosoever is thriving in that religion, it's sin. One takes to religion not to remain wrapped up in sin. No. Religion is for being in the light. Devotion to God and sin, they don't go together. That religion is a poison million times, one would say like that. If religion is sin, then nobody would like to be a religious man, a sinner. And if you want to be, you have your open doors to hell. And then Maharshi asked, had he actually understood the comment correctly, that sinning is inevitable. It was hard for him to believe that anyone, let alone a religious person, could make such a remark. So he said, then it's all right. When you go towards the light, only increase of intensity of light is expected. If you go on the path of God, you don't expect darkness to increase. And if your guide tells you that it is inevitable that you have to suffer when you take to religious life, abandon that religion. Your life is more precious. That religious head, whosoever he may be, he is leading you to hell. How does it come about that over time, a religious teaching that begins by giving the light of God in the direct experience of its followers finishes up speaking of the inevitability of sin and therefore of suffering in the world? Maharshi explained this in a beautiful text in this publication called World Government News. It came out in 1979. In this section of this World Government News issue, Maharshi shows how there is a change in time between 100% natural law being lived, and then it declines to 75% natural law being lived by human beings, then 50%, and finally 25% of natural law being lived, even descending from 25% down to basically zero. And then in one generation, we see here on the right, what Maharshi calls the great leap of natural law in one generation, when it goes from 0% back to 100% in one generation. So this is the natural cycling of time. There is a time when the people live 100% natural law, total natural law, so that their whole life is on the level of the light of God, and every thought and impulse of life is in the evolutionary direction, in harmony with cosmic intelligence, with divine intelligence. But with the long passage of time, this 100% declines, and as each step of this decline, 100 to 75 to 50 to 25, Maharshi explains different religions come up in the world, and those guide the human race at those different levels of natural law being lived. Maharshi says in the text, natural law and the evolutionary perspective of religious codes. As long as 100% value of natural law is lived in daily life, people spontaneously act in accord with natural law, or in the language of religion, they act in accord with the will of God. And in the language of science, they live in a state of perfect physiological, psychological, sociological, and ecological integration, ideal mental and physical health. No specific code of conduct is needed. The infinite potential of life, the field of all possibilities, is owned in the awareness of everyone. And then Maharshi quotes the Bible, "Even the wind and the sea obey him." This heritage is spontaneously passed on from generation to generation. And the age has a name. The age of enlightenment. Consciousness on both levels, individual and collective, is in perfect accord with natural law, and therefore every aspect of life is evolutionary. Society is ideal and nations invincible. The family of nations enjoys perfect health in every way. The administration of society is so perfect and automatic that it is almost unseen, as is the case in nature, in which every impulse is evolutionary. So this is the description by Maharshi of that time, the age of enlightenment, the golden age, where 100% of natural law is lived in life. But as natural law declines, Maharshi says, religious codes arise to help man and guide him to maintain the ability to live natural law as much as he can. The decline of natural law in human existence should be understood in terms of the decline of man's ability to live natural law in daily life. As natural law continues to decline through the passage of time, man's ability further deteriorates, and he ceases to be capable of living up to the full value of the religious code. Diluted or simplified expressions of the religious code in the form of codes of different sects of the same religion arise in response to the need of the time. By the time natural law is expressed in its zero value in daily life, it has reached the lowest limit of its extreme range. The acceptance of suffering by religion is the indication of the complete decline of natural law in daily life. But here is the good news. Thence comes the point of return. The beauty is that at this point in time, the total value of natural law is in its pure potentiality, or completely latent form. It awakens to its own nature in its pure potentiality. And then the full potential of natural law immediately begins to express itself in daily life. This is the great leap of the nature of natural law within itself, from its zero level of expression to its 100% level of expression in practical life. The great leap at one time in one generation. And fortunately, this is this generation, our generation. And then Maharshi says, glory to Gurudev, Jai Gurudev. There is a comment also at the bottom of this page, which is very revealing. It says, when expounding the value of natural law, Maharshi always delights in upholding the dignity of all religions, their founders and leading exponents, because they are the ones who, in their time, provided a definite guideline to the confused mass of humanity regarding their sense of right and wrong. Every religion is the highest possible expression of natural law in its time, Maharshi says. Today, when the swing of natural law is taking a great leap to express its full potential in daily life, it is clear that the grand cycle of the expressions of natural law can never be forgotten. The history of the rise and fall of natural law, and with that the rise and fall of religions, can never be forgotten. It is all this taken together that expresses the full value of natural law in the eternal continuum of life. What we find today is that after thousands of years of the different religions of the world, all of them seem to be suffering from the problem that the original teaching of the religious founders has been lost over time. Maharshi explains this. He explained right from the very beginning of the movement. He explained it in his book, The Science of Being and Art of Living, 40 years ago. Maharshi said that the word religion comes from the Latin infinitive religare, re meaning back, ligare meaning to bind, or that which binds one back. The purpose of religion is to bind man back to his source, to his origin. Religion is a way, or at least it should be a way, to raise the consciousness of man to the level of God consciousness, and the human mind to the level of divine intelligence or universal cosmic mind. The purpose of religion is to attune the individual life to the laws of nature so that it flows naturally in the stream of evolution. Maharshi goes on to say that the different religions now have basically left the outer body but not the inner spirit. They give the do's and don'ts and rituals and dogmas. But in reality, that spirit inside the religion has departed. And that is why the followers of the different religions are experiencing suffering. He said, it doesn't mean that religious values don't have any value, religious rituals don't have any value. The ritual and dogmatic aspects of religion are certainly necessary, because for the soul to exist, so must the body. Their value is that they constitute the body of religion for the purpose of providing an opportunity for the spirit of religion to guide the destiny of the people. The rituals of the various religions represent the body, and the practice of directly experiencing the state of being, the light of God within, represents the spirit. Both are necessary and should go hand in hand, and one will not survive without the other. The purpose of religion, Maharshi says, should not only be to indicate what is right and wrong. To fulfill its purpose, it should elevate man to a state of life where he will choose only what is right and will, by nature, avoid what is wrong. The true spirit of religion is lacking if it merely lays down what is right or wrong and creates the fear of punishment in hell and the fear of God in the minds of men. The purpose of religion should be to take away all fear. It should not seek to achieve its purpose by instilling a fear of the Almighty. So these are Maharshi's expressions. The life of a religious man should show good and dynamic activity on the surface, and underneath should have that unshakable eternal peace which is found at the depth of the ocean. A religious life should be lived, Maharshi goes on to say, in bliss, joyfulness, peace, harmony, creativity, and intelligence. The stream of religious life should at least flow on the level of common sense. It should be a life of love, kindness, and tolerance, with an innate desire to help one's fellow man. These qualities should make up the natural state of mind of a religious man. If these qualities, together with the state of God consciousness, are not naturally found in a religious man, then the name of his religion is only a burden to him. And finally, Maharshi says that the practice of transcendental meditation is just that practice which will allow any follower of any religion to do what has been taught through the ages in their religion, and to rise to the level of divine being and bring fulfillment to their own religion. I bring this up also especially because these days there is quite some publicity in the media about a changing understanding of the beginning days of Christianity. These understandings have been around for a quarter of a century, but now they're beginning to get some popular currency as well. What has come out is that in the teaching of Jesus Christ, there was what one could say was a public teaching, and then there was a private and secret teaching. And that over time, only some elements of the public teaching, or the public teaching as it was subsequently interpreted by others, has been left, while the private and secret teaching has disappeared from the knowledge of the human race. The private and secret teaching is clear from basic expressions that are there in even the four Gospels that tell the story of the life of Jesus Christ. And those teachings indicate, first of all, that the kingdom of heaven is within every human being who is ever born. So that is the reality of everyone. The kingdom of heaven is within every human being. Jesus Christ also indicated that those who are pure in their heart shall actually see God. This was the teaching, not that it was just something for after death. It was not something just based upon faith in his teaching, and after death heaven would be experienced. But right now, here in human life, that it was possible to experience the light of God that is within every human being. In the Gospel according to St. Mark, he makes the distinction between the teaching that is given to the public and this private teaching. It says, "Unto you it is given to know the mystery of the kingdom of God. But for those outside, everything is in parables, so that they may indeed see but not perceive, that they may hear but not understand." So only for those who were initiated into the secret mysteries, into the methods of direct experience of God, only those fully and deeply understood, while those who heard on the level of just descriptions in the speeches, the sermons of Christ, they had some understanding on the intellectual level, but not that direct experience. Christ speaks also just in the way that all the great prophets and sages of the world speak about their true reality. In the Gospel of John, the Jews ask Jesus who he claims to be, and he replies, "Truly, truly, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am." Not "I was," "I am." And this is the eternal I am, the eternal being. He had that same glory, he said, before the foundation of the world. That, again, is that eternal being spoken of by all the religions of the world, and now given as the direct experience from the Vedic teaching of His Holiness Maharshi Mahesh Yogi in this age. "He gave His glory unto others," he said, "so that they may be one, even as God and I are one." And he said he wanted everyone to be where I am. And he said everyone who follows a master will become just as the master, the same as the master. He was actually attacked at one point by the Jews for saying that he was one with God. And they were threatening to stone him for saying that. And he quoted Old Testament, says to them, he says, "Is it not written in your law, I said, you are gods?" This was the teaching that was given at that time. So this was the reality, and in the first centuries after Christ, for those who were spiritually deserving, who had very high quality of purity in their life, this secret teaching was given, and it was even written down. And the fact that it existed is seen in the writings of Saint Clement of Alexandria, who clearly acknowledges in his writings that there was a secret teaching of Christ, and it was expressed in a secret gospel of Mark, who wrote down many of these most private and secret teachings. So why did it not continue and survive, the secret teaching? What happened was that it began to get out. There was a teacher called Carpocrates who took that secret teaching and started to make it more public. And multitudes of people were coming and listening and wanting to learn these secrets, receive this initiation to directly experience the kingdom of heaven that was within them, within everyone. The church fathers at that time became very distressed by this spread of this secret teaching, and especially because, it seems, they felt that this was going to lead to the loss of the control of the church and its followers for those fathers of the church, those leaders of the church. St. Clement says, when he was writing to others at that time, they found this text quite recently in the old manuscript. This Mark, this disciple of Peter, he took the initiation of the different people in the innermost sanctuary of truth, which has been hidden seven times. That was an interesting expression in itself, like the seven states of consciousness. And he left his writing to the church in Alexandria, where it was extremely carefully guarded, being read only to those who had been initiated into the great mysteries. But when it got out, then they decided to publicly deny the existence of this secret teaching. And over time, in order to politically command the church, the fathers of the church began more and more to ignore and then to treat as heresy the idea that the light of God could be experienced by anyone by virtue of these secret initiations into these mysteries, as they were called, to give the experience of the light of God within. Incidentally, those mysteries involved the use of a word or sound. So this is very interesting to see, this bifurcation in the church, which eventually led to the actual declaration as heresy, the very most essential teaching that Christ gave at that time in the world. Unfortunately, this has been the fate of teachers throughout the ages, that as time goes by, that essential pure teaching is lost to the human race. All that is left is the outer body of the religion, the do's and don'ts and rituals, while the inner experience, which was the essence, the core of the teaching of that great leader of religion, is lost to the world. Just to give you some idea that this is not just something that was from this one letter, but actually has been found now in many books that were left out of the Bible. About 80 books were left out of the Bible that were more precisely focused on this secret teaching of Christ. Many of them were, at least, including, for example, the Gospel of St. Thomas, which reads very much like the Upanishads in so many different ways. It reads like Bhagavad Gita. It reads like all of the essence of supreme wisdom of life. Here are some examples of what you can find in this teaching of Christ when you look into the full range of what he taught, available in all the books, not just the books that were chosen about 350 years after he died to become the Bible. He was asked, for example, what is the sign of God within you? He said, it is movement and rest. And everyone who watches Maharshi's addresses knows Maharshi constantly speaking of the reality of consciousness as silence and dynamism both together. Christ speaks of this as filling, he wants to fill his followers with the joy with which he is filled, so far from the image of suffering and so close to the teaching of Maharshi that life is infinite bliss. Christ said, for I know that you are able to do everything with joy, and for the person is unconditionally free. He also spoke of the greatness, something called the greatness, just like the word Brahm, and that in the greatness was the word meaning the sound, and that all heaven on earth were the manifestations of that sound in the greatness, just exactly the reality of Brahm, of totality, of Ved, of Vedic sound, expressing as the laws of nature and the whole universe. He also said that for those who are united, that is the life of bliss and joy. But for those who are divided, who do not experience the unity that is within, then they have the darkness of life, suffering in life. How to know God? Christ says, peace dwells in the heart of silence. Be still and know that I am God. He also said in one other text, and thy body, thy heart, and thy mind shall join in oneness, in sacred flight, to the heavenly sea of peace. It is just what Maharshi teaches to the world. Experience that stillness, that silence of consciousness, by transcending. Experience that reality and live in that heavenly sea of peace. Christ said the law of God is within you, not in the books. He said it is written in everything. It is in the grass, in the tree, in the river, in the mountains, but chiefly it is in yourselves. Describing just what His Majesty Raja Ram describes, the discovery of total natural law in the physiology of everyone and in the consciousness of everyone. This is the reality of total natural law. It is in everything in creation, in every grain of creation, but find it in your own self. He also said that self-knowledge is the key. Those who know all but are lacking in the knowledge of themselves are utterly lacking. While you are working with me, though you are ignorant of other things, already you have obtained knowledge, and you will be described as one who knows the self. So all of these beautiful expressions are there, and the emphasis on experiencing this reality here and now, not later, but now, immediately, in the present. It is a misfortune that these essential teachings have gone out of all the religions of the world. You can find the same precious divine insights in all of the religions of the world, and all of them are just completely reminiscent, are exactly the same as the expressions that Maharshi brings us from the eternal Ved, which is the Nitya and Aparishaya reality of Atma, the source of all natural law and the source of all religions on earth. But now the path is wide open for every religious follower, without changing their religion, without changing the authority of their priests or anything within their own structure, simply to give themselves the experience of that light of God, that kingdom of heaven within, and rise to that higher state of consciousness, which will give them the direct realization of God. Not just the talk of it, the words about it, but the direct experience of God realization and of unity with God. And on that basis, life that is in the divine flow of evolution and in which all possibilities are available, the wind and the sea obey such individuals. This is the golden time that is coming. The fulfillment of all religious traditions on earth, thanks to the teachings of His Holiness Maharshi Mahesh Yogi. Every day the Maharshi Channel goes out 24 hours to India and all around the world with Maharshi's beautiful action plan to create heaven on earth. Jai Guru Dev.
World politics and world economy. Rise of the global country of world peace. Prevention-oriented ideal administration of Ram Raj for every nation to enjoy invincibility and perpetual peace on earth. His Excellency, Dr. Bevan Morris. Minister of Enlightenment of the Global Country of World Peace.
China and India are the two largest countries of the world. And the connection between these two nations goes back through thousands and thousands of years. They are, of course, neighbors. They share borders. Over recent years, over the past decades, there has been tension between these two great nations, even wars that have been fought. But now it is happy news that China and India are growing in the warmth of their friendship, in the warmth of their relationship. One indication of China's increasing openness to the greatness of Indian civilization is the realization that Chinese medicine and many other essential ingredients of the ancient Chinese culture are deeply connected to India, have their source in the profound Vedic knowledge of India. Anyone who has experienced Chinese traditional medicine visiting China is surprised to find that the Chinese medical doctors, traditional doctors, take the pulse of the patient and detect the diseases from the pulse, just like Nadi Vigyan in the Vedic medicine of India that Maharshi has brought back in this age. And there is a growing desire in China to take advantage of this profound knowledge from India to benefit its 1.3 billion people. One indication of this also that Maharshi was delighting in is the relationship that Maharshi University of Management in the United States has established with corresponding university, business university in Beijing in China, which has led to the degrees, academic degrees, of Maharshi University of Management now being accepted by the Ministry of Education of all China. In discussing this opening and the new wave of interest in all programs for the development of higher states of consciousness, of enlightenment in the students of China, I mentioned to Maharshi one interesting story of ancient times about China. There was, in the ancient times of China, a very, very great sage, enlightened sage, named Lao Tzu. And he wrote a book called the Tao Te Ching. It's a classic of the literature of enlightenment around the world. The story goes that the reason that Lao Tzu wrote down the words of this book, this short book, because he was trying to go to India. And when he tried to leave the city where he was living, the cities in those days had walls, they had gates. When he tried to leave the city, the gatekeeper said, "You cannot leave unless you write down all of your teaching, all of your wisdom of life, and leave that here with us for us to have for all times." So it was when he was trying to go to India that this great text was written down. I read to Maharshi again recently some of the expressions of the Tao Te Ching because they are just the expressions of Vedic knowledge of India, just exactly the same, and just the same as those perfect expressions of Vedic wisdom that Maharshi has brought out in our age in his Vedic science. Lao Tzu describes the Tao, or Tao sometimes people say, as infinite and eternal, present for all beings. Here is his definition of the Tao: solitary, unchanging, infinite, eternally present. It is the mother of the universe. For lack of a better name, I call it the Tao. And he goes on to say, the Tao is like a well filled with infinite possibilities. It is empty like space, yet inexhaustible, and gives birth to infinite worlds. Every being in the universe is an expression of the Tao. When Maharshi heard this definition of reality by Lao Tzu, first of all, he gloried in the simplicity and perfection of his description of that infinite reality of creation. And then he particularly liked the expression, "For lack of a better name, I call it the Tao." It's an expression that shows Lao Tzu's experience of that reality, which is all-comprehensive, which includes everything. So it is beyond any name, but for lack of a better name, he calls it the Tao. It was not just Lao Tzu of ancient China who expressed these same principles that are unfolded in the Ved and Vedic literature and 40 aspects of nature's intelligence, the Ved and Vedic literature that hum eternally in the level of the unified field. Confucius also, who was a disciple of Lao Tzu, describes the same reality, the absolute one. Confucius says, "Thus, absolute truth is indestructible, Being indestructible, it is eternal. Being eternal, it is self-existent. Being self-existent, it is infinite. Being infinite, it is vast and deep. Being vast and deep, it is transcendental and intelligence. It is because it is vast and deep that it contains all existence. So here are the sages of China describing just the reality of Atma, of the self, and of Brahm, wholeness, totality, in which everything exists. The reality of the Absolute One. What this reminds us again is that actually the teachings of all the great sages of the world are literally identical. They may be in a different language, whether Chinese or Aramaic or Greek or any other language of the world, but they are one and the same in their content. They may be expressed in slightly different ways according to the nature of the time, how much the people are able to understand and appreciate in that time and place. But nevertheless, the teaching everywhere is just one teaching. In this connection, it is also important to show that Lao Tzu taught the technique of transcendental meditation. Just as all the great sages, whatever they taught, the essential point was, have the experience. Gain the level of your transcendental aspect of being. Unmanifest level of your own consciousness. Experience that. That is the basic message of every sage and prophet of the whole human race. Lao Tzu, in this regard, mentions as follows, the master kept his mind always at one with the Tao, and that is what gives him radiance. He also says, the superior person settles his mind as the universe settles the stars in the sky. By connecting his mind with its subtle origin, he calms it. Once calmed, it naturally expands, and ultimately his mind becomes as vast and immeasurable as the night sky. So for anyone who practices transcendental meditation, these words are completely familiar. This is the experience that Maharshi has bestowed upon over 5 million people in the world. The mind settling down to the source of thought, to the origin of mind, where it is infinitely calm, perfectly silent, and then expanding to infinity. This is the experience of Atma, of the self, of the pure transcendental state of being, which is the origin of everything in the universe, of which everything in the universe is the expression. Maharshi has been emphasizing as 2003 came to an end, on education which is not based upon intellectual knowing, trying to learn thousands of laws of nature one by one and memorize them and use them, but education which gives the student the experience of being, so that they are awakened in that reality, that Absolute One, which is the basis of all laws of nature and therefore of the entire universe. And functioning from there, the student's able to live a life always in the evolutionary direction, always in bliss, and capable of accomplishing anything by mere desiring, and of knowing anything by mere desiring. It is a joy to report that the same teaching is there as in the ancient Vedic tradition, also again in the ancient tradition of China. Lao Tzu says, without going outside, you may know the whole world. Without looking through the window, you may see the ways of heaven. The farther you go, the less you know. Thus the sage knows without traveling. He sees without looking. He works without doing. This is exactly the teaching of Maharshi about Vedic education. He once said that eventually students, and maybe that eventually is going to become sooner than we think, even immediate, students could actually just sit under a tree, just sit under the banyan tree, close the eyes, settle into their own transcendental, unbounded state of consciousness, and discover there anything and everything that they could possibly wish to know or understand, and achieve from that state of silence anything that they could possibly desire, by activating the totality of natural law to carry out their wishes for them spontaneously, without them having to move a muscle or perform an action. This is the level of Vedic education, the ultimate level of the support of nature that Maharshi is bringing to the world. He's described just this phenomenon that Lao Tzu described in the verse I just mentioned in the words, Ritam Bhara Pragya. It means that intellect which fathoms the truth, that intellect which is open to all possible knowledge and which commands the creation, is the reality not only of knowing about something, but being the thing that you know, being that all the laws of nature together so that anything can be accomplished. Another expression, Jyotish Mati Pragya, that awareness that is filled with light, that is all possibilities, that is open to knowledge of everything, past, present, and future. So this is the reality of the education that is coming, and it would only be natural for China to have such an education because it is in the deepest roots of the ancient Chinese culture. It is also a joy to say that the principle of invincibility, individual and national invincibility, is present in the ancient teachings of China as well, just as in the Vedic tradition. We have an expression in Yoga Sutra that Maharshi often quotes about how to attain invincibility, and that is Tat Sannidhau Varat Yagaha, that is, in the vicinity of yoga, in the vicinity of that state of union, experience of transcendental consciousness, hostile tendencies are eliminated. So for those individuals who have that state of enlightened consciousness, hostility cannot arise in their environment. And Maharshi has taken that a step further, that when groups of such individuals thrive in any nation together, then the nation as a whole can avoid all hostility against national life. Lao Tzu says something just like that. He says, he who knows how to live can walk abroad without fear of rhinoceros or tiger. He will not be wounded in battle, for in him rhinoceroses can find no place to thrust their horn, tigers no place to use their claws, and weapons no place to pierce. Why is this so? Because he has no place for death to enter. This is the reality of the enlightened, established on that level, which is omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent, that immortal level of consciousness. It disallows any hostility, any violence, any negativity to come in that environment. Lao Tzu also brings out just the basic principles that Maharshi has brought for how invincibility of national life is attained. And it is not, just as Maharshi says, it is not through weapons. Lao Tzu says, good weapons are instruments of fear. All creatures hate them. Therefore, the followers of Tao never use them. Weapons are instruments of fear. They are not a wise man's tool. And he goes on to say that when we look at war, if you celebrate war, you are celebrating killing. If you celebrate victory, then you are celebrating killing. And if you delight in killing, you cannot fulfill yourself ever. He says, any victory in war actually should be celebrated like a funeral. That is the reality of war. He also explains the difference between a nation in which the Tao, in which that absolute one is being held onto by the people in their own experience through their good education, compared to one that is not connected to the Tao, to the field of Atma, as Vedic tradition would say. He says, when the Tao is present in the universe, the horses haul manure. When the Tao is absent from the universe, war horses are bred outside the city. Very simple principle of the protection of national life. When the Tao, when the absolute one is maintained in national life, then agriculture is done. The horses haul manure. When the Tao is absent from the universe, then war horses are bred outside the city. Then war dawns in national life. Then also he mentions the principle that Maharshi has given us again and again. Prevention. The method of preserving national invincibility is to prevent warfare. And Lao Tzu says, peace is easily maintained. Trouble is easily overcome before it starts. Deal with it before it happens. Set things in order before there is confusion. Heyam dhukam anagatam. This is the new principle of administration of our age. This expression that Maharshi has brought to light from Yoga Sutra is just the explanation of the principle of administration to be cherished by every country in the world. Prevent war before it arises. Maintain the peace by preventing the birth of any enemy to national life, of removing hostility from world consciousness. And the way to do this is just to hold on to that reality of the Tao. In Vedic terms, to give every student through Vedic education the experience of Atma, the Self, the unbounded ocean of their own consciousness, and have them enjoy that reality of Brahmi Chaitanya, Brahman consciousness, field of all possibilities lived in life, life in bliss, radiating bliss. A nation of such individuals, as Lao Tzu also points out, will be a nation where the government will be able to achieve everything while seeming to do nothing. ideal life of heaven on earth will be created. So we have the joy that in all the religious traditions, the song of life has been sung. It has been forgotten in the world, but today, once again, it is being sung in the whole world by His Holiness Maharshi Mahesh Yogi. And for this reason, hopes are so bright for a better civilization for the whole human race. Jai Guru Dev.
Tam samidyo vase vrshannagne vishvanyarya ilas pade samidhya se sano vasunya bhara sangachadvam samvadad Tvam tam vo manam si janatam Deva bhagayatha purve sanjanana upasate samano mantrasamites Samani samanam manas sahajittame esham Samanam mantram abhimantrayevas samane namo Havisha juhomi Samani vākūtis samānā hṛdayāni vāha Samānamastu vo mano yathā avastu saha sati Dhruvādyaur dhruvā prithivī dhruvā saf Parvata ime Dhruvam Vishvamidam Jagad Dhruvo Raja Vishamayam Dhruvam Te Raja Varuno Dhruvam Devo Brihaspati Dhruvanta indrascha agnischa rashtran dharayatan dhruvam Om
Atha Krishna yajur vedah Om Apava etas matri rashtram kramati Yoshvamedhena yajate Urdhvamena much Chayata Dityaha Shrirvai Rashtramashvamedhaha Shriyamevasmai Rashtramurdhvamuchayati Venu Bharangira Vivetyaha Rashtram Vaibharaha Rashtramevasmai Pariyuhati Atha madhya medhata mitya shrirvai rashtrasya madhyam shriyameva varundhe jite vate punan nivetya shemo vai rashtrasya shito vata shema meva varundhe
अथ शुक्लयजुर्वेदः हरिः ओम् सूर्जतवाचा सस्थाराष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रम् मे दत्तस्वाहा सूर्जतवाचा सस्थाराष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रामामुखमैदत्त सूर्जावर्चा सस्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रम् मे दत्त स्वाहा सूर्जावर्चा सस्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रामामुखमैदत्त मान्दास्ताराष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रम् मे दत्तस्वाहा मान्दास्ताराष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रामामुखमयि दत्त व्राजक्षीतस्ताराष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रम् मे दत्त स्वाहा व्राजक्षीतस्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रामामुखमयि दत्त वासास्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रम् मे दत्त स्वाहा वासास्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रामामुखमयि दत्त साविष्ठास्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रम् मे दत्त स्वाहा साविष्ठास्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रामामुखमयि दत्त सकवारीस्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रम् मे दत्त स्वाहा सकवारीस्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रामामुखमयि दत्त जानाभृतस्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रम् मे दत्त स्वाहा जानाभृतस्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रामामुखमयि दत्त विश्वाभृतस्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रम् मे दत्त स्वाहा विश्वाभृतस्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रामामुखमयि दत्त तापाः स्वराजस्था राष्ट्रादा राष्ट्रामामुखमयि दत्त माधुमातीर्माधुमातीभिः प्रचियन्ताम् माहि क्षतरम् क्षत्रियाय वन्नवाना आनाधृष्टा श्रीदाता साहौ जासौ mahichataran chatariyaya dadhati harihi om.
Atha atharva vedah. Om bhadramichantarshaya svarvedastapo dikshamopanishe duragre tato rashtram balamo jascha jatam tadasmai deva upasannamanto sahrudayam sam manasyama vidveshaṁ kṛṇāmi vaha anyo anyam abhiharyata vatthan jātami vāgnya anurata pito putro matra bhavato sammana jaya patye madhu matim vacham vadato shanti vam ma bhrata bhrata randvikshan ma swasara muta swasa samyantastau rata bhutva vacham vadata bhadraya yena devana viyanti no cha vidvishate mitha tatkrannamo brahmhavo grihe samjnanam purushebhyah jyayasvantaschitteno māviyoshtasam radhayantas sadhurascharantah anyo anyasmai valguvadanta eta sadhrechinan vastam manasaskrnomi kamani prapasahavonna bhagas kamane yoktre sahavo yunajmi samyanto agnim sapariyatarana bhimi vabhita sadhrichinan vastam manasaskrnomye kashnushtin samvanane na sarvana deva ivamratam rakshamana sthayam pratastau manaso astu o
atha vaidikara kara.
संकल्प करेंगे
शन्नो मित्रश्यं वरुणः शन्नो भवत्वर्यमा शन्न इन्द्रो बृहस्पतिः शन्नो विष्णुरुक्रमः नमो ब्रह्मणे नमस्ते वायो त्वमेव प्रत्यक्षं ब्रह्मासि त्वमेव प्रत्यक्षं ब्रह्म वदिष्यामि ऋतं वदिष्यामि सत्यं वदिष्यामि तन्मामवतु तद्वक्तारमवतु अवतु माम् अवतु वक्तारम् ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः अथ तिलकधारणम् ॐ भद्रं कर्णेभिः शृणुयाम देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागुम्फस्तनोभिः व्यशेम देवहितयदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नः सार्क्ष्यो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्ददातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः अथ देवतानमस्कारः ॐ नमो महद्भ्यो नमो अर्भकेभ्यो नमो नम आशिनेभ्यः यजामदेवान्यदिशक्नवा ममाज्याय सस्यं समावृक्षिदेवाः ॐ अथ पवित्रीकरणम् ॐ अपवित्रः पवित्रो वा सर्वावस्थाङ्गतोऽपि वा यस्मरेत् पुण्डरीकाक्षं सबाह्याभ्यन्तरशुचिः आचमनम् ॐ केशवाय नमः ॐ नारायणाय नमः ॐ माधवाय नमः गोविन्दाय नमः करौ प्रक्षाल्य प्राणायामः हस्ते जलाक्षतपुष्पाणि गृहीत्वा सङ्कल्पं कुर्यात् ॐ स्वस्ति श्रीसमस्तजगदुत्पत्तिस्थितिलयकारणस्य रक्षा शिक्षा विचक्षणस्य प्रणत पारिजातस्य अशेष पराक्रमस्य श्रीमदनंत वीर्यस्य आदि नारायणस्य अचिन्त्या परिमित शक्त्या ध्रियमानानां महाजलौघमध्ये परिभ्रमतामनेक कोटि ब्रह्माण्डानामेकतमे अव्यक्तमहदहंकार पृथिव्यप्तेजो वायुवाकाशाद्यावरणैरावृते अस्मिन् महति ब्रह्माण्डखण्डे आधारशक्ति श्रीमदादिवाहदंष्ट्राग्रविराजिते कूर्मानन्तवासुकितक्षककुलिककर्कोटकपद्ममहापद्मशङ्खाज्यष्टमहानागैर्ध्रियमाणे ऐरावतपुण्डरीकवामनकुमुदाञ्जनपुष्पदन्तसार्वभौमसुप्रतीकाष्टदिग्गजोपरिप्रतिष्ठितानाम् अतलवितलसुतलतलातररसातलमहातलपाताललोकानामुपरि भागे भुवर्लोकस्वर्लोकमहर्लोकजनोलोकतपोलोकसत्यलोकाख्य षल्लोकानामधो भागे भूर्लोके चक्रवालशैलमहावलयनागमध्यवर्तिनो महाकालमहाफणिराजशेषस्य सहस्रफणामणिमण्डलमण्डिते जिग्दन्तिशुण्डादण्डोद्दण्डिते अमरावत्यशोकवती भोगवती सिद्धवती गान्धर्ववती काशी काञ्ची अवंती अलकावती यशोवतीति पुण्यपुरी प्रतिष्ठिते लोकालोकाचलवलयिते लवणेक्षुसुरासर्पिदधिक्षीरोदकार्णवपरिवृते जम्बूप्लक्षकुशक्रौञ्च शाकशाल्मलिपुष्कराख्यसप्तद्वीपयुते इन्द्रकांस्यताम्रगभस्तिनागसौम्यगान्धर्वचारणभारतेति नवखण्डमण्डिते सुवर्णगिरिकर्णिकोपेतमहासरोरुहाकार पञ्चाशत्कोटियोजनविस्तीर्णभूमण्डले अयोध्या मथुरा माया काशी काञ्ची अवन्तिका द्वारावतीति मोक्षदायिकसप्तपुरी प्रतिष्ठिते सुमेरुनिषदत्रिकूटरजतकूटाम्रकूटचित्रकूटहिमवद्विन्ध्याचलानाम् महापर्वतप्रतिष्ठिते हरिवर्षकिम् पुरुषयोश्च दक्षिणे नवसहस्रयोजनविस्तीर्णे मलयाचलसह्याचलविन्ध्याचलानामुत्तरे स्वर्णप्रस्थचण्डप्रस्थचान्द्रसूक्तावन्तकरमणकमहारमणक पाञ्चजन्यसिंहललङ्केति नवखण्डमण्डिते गङ्गाभागीरथी गोदावरी क्षिप्रा यमुना सरस्वती नर्मदा ताप्ती चन्द्रभागा कावेरी पयोष्णी कृष्णवेणी भीमरथी तुङ्गभद्रा ताम्रपर्णी विशालाक्षी चर्मण्वती वेत्रवती कौशिकी गण्डकी विश्वामित्री सरयू करतोया ब्रह्मानन्दा महीत्यनेकपुण्यनदी विराजिते भारतवर्षे भरतखण्डे जम्बूद्वीपे कूर्मभूमौ पाम्बवती कुरुक्षेत्रादिसमभूमौ आर्यावर्तान्तर्गतब्रह्मावर्तैकदेशे गङ्गायमुनयोर्मध्यभागे योजनव्यापिविस्तीर्णे क्षेत्रे ज्ञानयुगप्रवर्तकानाम् महर्षिमहेशयोगिवर्याणाम् परमाराध्यगुरुदेवैः अनन्तश्रीविभूषितैः ज्योतिष्पीठाधीश्वरैः जगद्गुरुश्रीमच्छङ्कराचार्यब्रह्मानन्दसरस्वती महाभागैः सम्पादितशतमुखकोटिहोममहायज्ञपावितायाम् भूमौ समस्तवैदिकवाङ्मयसम्पत्समृद्धवैभवोपेतायाम् भारतवर्षस्य पश्चिमदिशायाम् स्थितः हॉलैंड नामक देशे फ्लोड्रॉप नामक उपनगरे सकल जगत् स्रष्टुः परार्ध